In this time of economic uncertainty, there's a lot of financial anxiety out there as a coronavirus pandemic could last into next year. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Every day, the stock market rises and falls. There are jobless reports that millions are filing for unemployment insurance as businesses shut down. We've not seen such a scramble on what to do about our own finances since the Great Recession. Christine Ibbotson is author of a new book appropriately titled Don't Panic: How to Manage Your Finances and Financial Anxieties During and After Coronavirus. She has some answers, and she's with us this morning. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Don.
Do you expect, and what should we be thinking about, if this virus, which looks like it's going to last perhaps into next year, what are you looking at there?
So if we look at the market, there's a lot of people who are thinking that we're going to go into a recession. I just don't see that. And I have been in the business a very long time, 25 years. And, I mean, there's no denying that we would have never anticipated the duration and the depth of pain that we have seen in the market. And at this point, I think seeing another drop of 10 to 20% is maybe not out of the question. But this crisis is not like any other that we have witnessed in the past. And I would caution investors against using traditional stock market measures to try and time that market entry. You definitely want to look at the market as a buying opportunity for sure, since in the past, the 2008 financial crisis, we saw the market rebound and quadruple in value from 2009 to 2019. So if you were brave enough to invest back in 2009, you would have made four times your investment.
Do you think that this is going to last as long as, for instance, in terms of recovery from the Great Recession?
No, I don't. This crisis is different. I hear a lot of people, they say that, we're going to go into a recession, and most people feel like this is more of a financial crisis than maybe a health crisis. And, I kind of somewhat agree with that. But if you look at what's happened with the coronavirus, when it first came out, COVID-19, together with the oil crisis that we're still experiencing, history really doesn't support the downturn or that explosive downturn that we are now seeing. And those, the market is aggressively reactive, but those downward swings that we're seeing, we're going to see that going the opposite way as well. Like, in my view, there's a lot of pent-up demand that's going to provide that eventual recovery.
It does seem, though, that there are going to be a lot of businesses who, if this thing goes on for a long time, could very well shut down, which should have ultimately an impact on demand, as it were, just in the general economy. I mean, do you think those businesses are going to come back quickly, or do you think we're going to shed a lot of them, particularly small businesses?
I think the next bull market is coming. One whose duration, we can't really determine that yet. I think, in the next maybe 2 to 4 months or 1 to 3 months, we're going to see more of a defensive market. And then, the recovery will probably be maybe 40 to 50%, but it'll take us 12 to 18 months to do that recovery. And then after that, I think we will have another bull market for 3 to 5 years for sure. I mean, this should be looked at as more of, with your financial advisor, they look for these events. And they're called tactical asset allocations, where you have a unique opportunity to purchase undervalued stock and hold it until the market rebounds. So that's what I would want you to consider, because often these events, we had the financial crisis in 2008, like 12 years ago. These events don't usually come around this quickly again. And we should look at this as kind of a sale event.
Do you think, by the way, that the economy in general, and perhaps stocks in particular, are going to be impacted by people's abilities to, say, pay their mortgages or to pay their rents, for that matter, as a way to, like, get forward? I mean, and we saw a lot of mortgages, you know, drop out. I mean, people found themselves without homes, right, in the Great Recession.
In 2008, for
yeah,
sure.
So,
yeah. This isn't the same, though. You know, in 2008, that was completely different. That was, you know, there was full-scale, you know, a financial collapse, and there was the credit crisis as well. This is not the same thing. And, you know, governments now are really quick to step up. You know, we've seen student loans at 0%, and you can suspend your monthly payments. You don't have to make your student loan payments. We've seen credit card companies offering relief programs. We've got the government offering payroll protection loans, where you get the first 8 weeks is, like, completely forgivable by the SBA. So this is, like, free money. And then you've even got the economic injury disaster loans for the first $10K. That's free money. And then for anybody who, you know, as long as you made less than $50K last year, you automatically qualify for the EI benefit, which is a flat $600 per week. So we know that we're not going to go hungry, right? And it's totally different than it was in the first financial crisis.
So do you think that in terms of businesses, and there's a lot of talk about relief, particularly for them, but I've heard that or read that a lot of the relief that was supposed to go to business, small businesses, actually wound up in the hands of larger businesses, particularly because they had all the wherewithal, the staffing to immediately apply for these things. And now we're hearing about money running out. Is that going to be an impact, or do you see the government, say, getting more money to these businesses?
No, I don't actually see that. You know, for small business owners, you know, the Paycheck Protection Program, which covers not just payroll, but it covers rent, mortgage interest, utilities of small business owners, sole proprietors, independent contractors, self-employed people. So as long as you've got less than 500 employees, you can automatically qualify. And, you know, the banks are in a totally different situation now, and the government is in a totally different situation. The banks aren't collapsing. This is the time for you to personally look at your debt portfolio. You know, before this crisis, we were seeing that the banks had been down with their mortgage rates for a long time. Their lending rates were really low, and they were starting to bring them up. So we saw, we were starting to see posted rates, 5, 5.5, low sixes, albeit they were all with discounts, sure. But the banks had been down for so long, they were, like, itching to get up and to raise the rates. And then the coronavirus came in, and they had to go completely in the opposite direction. So, you know, I would say, why not exploit this economic situation? I know that's not very good to say, but I would want you to do that. Look at refinancing your debt and capturing a lower rate and then extending the term. Why can't you do that?
So let me ask you this, turning the attention to the stock market. Obviously the question that a lot of folks have, particularly if they have their 401ks and so on, is they ask themselves, should I be selling? Obviously your answer is not necessarily. Tell me a little bit about your idea about why you just got to hang on.
Well, you have. I know people are looking at their stock portfolio. Please don't look at it every day. Like, that's not really good for your mental health. And you know, it's going to come back. We have been following the stock market over the history of the last 100 years, and we've always seen this. You know, this is when the stock market is ticking along and just moving, and there's not very much up and down movement, we never really see stock break through those high thresholds that we're wanting to see. It often takes an explosive downturn to reach those unprecedented highs that we want. And if you haven't lost anything, if you don't sell. And what we saw in after the 2008 financial crisis was that a lot of people were panicked and they were selling. And then, okay, so you sell and you've lost all this money and realized all this loss, and now you start seeing the market turn, which it did in 2009 and 2010, and you start seeing it go up. Well, now when do you get back in? And it becomes this, you know, mental anxiety that you're like, oh my God, I lost all this money. When, how should I get back in? And I need to wait until it reaches this point to get back in. And then it never does. It just keeps climbing. Don't sell. Just stay where you are. And if you have extra money, put it in right now. And why not invest in the banks? The banks aren't going anywhere. The banks are actually, you know, they're providing all this mortgage relief and all this relief to people. Like, they're making revenue here. They're making money on all this interest. Why not invest in them? That's a good blue chip stock to invest in that you're going to make money on.
So what happens if you're sitting there and you don't have an emergency fund and yet you carry a lot of debt? What should you be thinking about?
I know. There's a lot of people that don't have emergency funds. Life's expensive, right? Like, it's costly. And, you know, maybe this event is... You know, when I talk to small business owners and they're upset, you know, I kind of want them to look at this unique event. And like, entrepreneurs are always looking for a leg up, right? They're looking for something unique that has happened. This is it. You need to kind of get creative, and you have a captive consumer audience all at home with time on their hands. So you shouldn't hesitate here, if you're a small business owner, to start taking advantage of these events. And that, you know, really only come around once or twice in a lifetime. And, you know, for other people that aren't self-employed, you need to start putting yourself out there. Maybe it is this crisis that is a sign you needed to maybe turn things around and go in a different direction. Complacency, regardless of whether we're in this crisis or not, is the killer of everybody's success. You know, everybody's life doesn't go in a straight line. Everybody's got something. And maybe this crisis is, you know, what you needed to bring that to the forefront and go in a different direction, to become more successful, to make more money, to have a job change, to do something different, and to, you know, make yourself successful. Because money and happiness is really just the byproduct of you making that change to become successful, right?
So what do you see as the difference between what you call good debt and bad debt?
Oh, well, that's easy. So bad debt is on a depreciating asset, so something that doesn't grow in value over time. So that would be like a car or a boat or something like that. And a good debt is something like your home, because it's going to go up in value. So I always say, you know, the three steps to success are, you know, one, making money, so you got to have income. The other is you got to have a savings plan, so you've got to put money away. And you know, you also have to have your money moving. So this is called monetization, right? You've got to get it earning more money. You can't make all the money to become super wealthy. You actually have to invest your money. So why not invest it in an appreciating asset, which is good debt? So So buying a home, leverage lending, putting it in something that's going to appreciate and grow over time and make you money while you're earning more money, right?
Mm-hmm. So in terms of, say, somebody who is, we'll start out with, who are like maybe in their 20s or the 30s or even 40s, what are you recommending that they do at this point?
Yeah, you know what? I see so many people that are in their late 50s and 60s, unfortunately, with nothing saved and a ton of debt. And if you can start earlier, you know, if you can start in your 30s or your 40s or your early 50s, it's not your financial planner that's going to get you where you want to go. It's you, right? You don't want your investment portfolio to be kind of on autopilot here. You need to be always reviewing your situation, whether that's your personal situation, your job prospects, and you've got to make those changes that you need to get you where you want to go. And you also have to look at, what do you want? What do you want out of your life? What do you want right now? And how do you envision your life for the rest of your life? What's your end game? And then start making a plan and go out and get it, right?
So what do you say to those people who are indeed approaching, say, their 60s or maybe be in their early 60s, and they haven't necessarily saved a lot? They obviously will have Social Security, obviously, but there's more to it than that. What do you say to them and what at this moment?
You know what? I my first book is How to Retire Debt-Free and Wealthy, and it is a collection of stories of people of all walks of life who have turned things around. So, you know, we look at people who are in their 20s and 30s. I mean, those are easy, right? But it's for those people that maybe have had career failure in their 50s and who have had to make changes. There are, sometimes you have to review your situation and say, you know what, I need to make a change here. I need more cash flow. We need to maybe look at getting a collateral charge. We need to maybe look at selling and downsizing or right-sizing our property, and we need to make changes. And you can't just keep it ticking along and living in debt and being unhappy or being worried about what's going to come around the corner, right? You've got to start making those changes.
Why do you think it is that so many people, and there are large numbers, I guess, who do find themselves heading into retirement, but with exactly that, with a lot of debt, they hadn't saved a lot. Is there something within the culture that we bought into? I mean, what is it that you're looking at, particularly when you talk to people?
You know what? It's not easy. We're not the same as we were in the 60s and the 70s. You know, there was a lot of people in the 60s and 70s who would buy one house, they would live there, they would pay it off. And this, you know, I'm going to come back to the banks here, but the banks have really created a culture of allowing people to use their homes like an ATM machine, like refinancing all the time and rolling in debt. Well, that's a killer. If you keep doing that, and the banks will turn around and say, it's almost like they're kind of, and I shouldn't say this, but they're kind of almost like a dealer, right? Like a drug dealer. And the money is the drug. And it's easy to get. It has been really, really easy. Even after the financial crisis, it's easy now. Even right now, it's super easy because because of the COVID-19 and the coronavirus crisis, we've loosened up the restrictions for qualifying. So So it's very easy. And the banks are more than willing to say, yeah, you know, you should increase your cash flow. Let's refinance all your debt and let's put it in a brand new mortgage and push the amortization out to 25 or 30 years. Well, how does that help anybody except the bank, right? Because it's all compounded front-end interest. You should be setting up your amortization to match the years that you have remaining to your retirement. So if you have, if you're 40 and you anticipate retiring at 60, then you should never be looking at an amortization of more than those 20 years. And if you're going to refi at 45, then now your amortization should be 15 years, because this keeps you accountable, right? You know you are financially setting yourself up to have your debt eradicated and eliminated by the time you hit retirement. And if you can do that earlier, rather than being in your 50s and 60s and then saying, oh my God, what happened? You're better off, for sure.
What about this issue or this idea of debt consolidation? We see a lot of, you know, ads to that effect. What about that?
Yeah. I'm not opposed to it. I do think it's a good idea. I think that you should get your debt portfolio in line. And that's the same as getting your investment portfolio in line, right? You might be investing in the stock market with dollar cost averaging and investing every month, and you should also be looking at your debt portfolio and trying to pay down your debt, or saying, you know what, this is the last refi that I'm going to do, and I'm going to set my amortization to match my retirement or the year that I anticipate retiring, maybe that's 65 or whatever, and I'm going to make it a priority to pay off my debt. And that is going to set yourself up for success, because even if you don't have a huge portfolio or a retirement savings, if you've maybe got a small work pension or even just the government pensions, if you had no debt, you are in a totally different situation. You don't have that money drain month to month, and you can do what you want to do.
What should they do about particularly student debt? I mean, I tell some of the students that, you know, when I went to college, which was way back when, you know, a few bucks and you were into a state school. Now there's tuition and people come out with $30,000 and $40,000 and $50,000 or more.
Yep.
Is there anything students can do about that, or the people who or gotten out of school? Is there something they can do about that?
You know what? School debt is a reality. It doesn't matter where you are and what country you live in. And now more and more we need higher education to get ahead and to get a better paying job. So it's just life. It's a reality. And you're going to have school debt. But you've got, and this is almost like you leveraging in yourself, right? Just like you leverage when you buy a home. You don't buy the home outright. You don't. So if you buy a home for $300,000, you don't have $300,000 sitting in your bank account. But you're going to put down a deposit, and you're going to, you know, move into that house, and you're going to leverage, and you're going to pay it off gradually. Same idea. You're leveraging not for buying a house, but you're leveraging on your ability to earn. And never discount your potential, your income potential, and your ability to earn more money. So I believe that student debt is just, you know, something that has to be done. And when you buy your home and you, you know, get into a property, why wouldn't you refinance it into that property? I mean, there's a lot of people that definitely do that. Or set yourself up a payment program, a structured payment program to pay it off. It's just a reality, and we just have to accept it. You know, it's going to get you where you want to go, so you definitely want to get a higher education.
It does seem to me that essentially, particularly this kind of debt, which we're seeing now, it's almost as if you're betting on the idea that if you graduate from college or get a further degree, that you are going to be able to be employed at such a rate in terms of pay that you'll be able to pay it off. But there are a lot of people who will graduate.
Sometimes.
Sometimes not.
Yep.
And it does seem as if there's a bet involved there. That leads a lot of people to say, well, maybe I shouldn't all my time in college and I should get a technical degree or something like that rather than be in debt so much.
You know what? This is a decision for each and every person. Everybody's different. And, you know, there's always going to be someone who is better and someone who is worse. I mean, this is not something that your listeners don't already know. You have to push yourself and get out of that that kind of bailout that you give yourself in your mind. The only way for you to be successful is for you to get uncomfortable, unfortunately. You have to get out of your comfort zone, push harder. And if that means getting a better education, or if that means, you know, going in a different direction and picking up a trade and maybe, you know, being the best that you can possibly be, and then you open up your own small business or in that trade profession or whatever, you know, having aspirations and dreams is one thing, but then you need to make it work. And, you know, how bad do you want it? Do you want it as bad, you know, can you taste it? Do you really want it? And if you do, you're going to get it. I mean, that's the American dream, right? You will get it.
Finally, just returning to the situation at hand. So what advice do you give to people in terms of budgeting when they're temporarily out of work?
Yeah, well, this is kind of like a pre-retirement wake-up call, right? Like, we're all at home.
Money of us, anyway.
Yeah, and, you know, this is kind of what it's going to feel like when you do your hard stop to working. So, do you like it? You know, ask yourself, what do you envision your retirement to be like? And now we have time. We can make a budget. Everybody can, and in my book, I tell you how to do that and how to make your own cascading financial plan and how to budget and what to look at. But we need to be saying, okay, well, how much is coming in and how much is going out? Take a piece of paper and draw on that income. Do we have enough? Are we in a shortfall here? And if we are in a shortfall, what are we going to do to fix it, right?
Mm-hmm. Is there specific kinds of things that you, or maybe the top one or two things that you would recommend somebody be looking at right now if they are unemployed? They might be getting some unemployment insurance. They might give them obviously some relief. But
yeah, and it goes without saying that you should be taking advantage of every government subsidy out there. And we know now that the governments have really stepped up this time. It's not the same as the other financial crises that we have been through. So, you know, you definitely need to look at all of the opportunities and, take advantage of everything you possibly can. And if this means that, you know, you're going to make a change with your career, or you're going to make a change with your finances, you're going to start budgeting, you're going to do something different, then great. You know, I often hear people say, and, you know, my son's in science. He hates it when I say this, but, you know, things happen for a reason. Maybe they do. So if that means you're going to turn and go in a different direction, then maybe you need to, right?
We've been speaking with Christine Ibbotson. She is author of a new book, appropriately titled these days, Don't Panic, How to Manage Your Finances and Financial Anxieties During and After Coronavirus. Appreciate you stopping by and chatting with us this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.